We're going back to July 1971 now, and the first of the Apollo J-class missions designed to put science first.
Good. This is really a rock and roller ride, isn't it? Never been on a ride like this before. Oh, boy. I'm glad they got this great suspension system on this thing.
While Dave Scott and Jim Irwin were bouncing around in their lunar rover above them in orbit, Command Module pilot Al Warden was carrying out observations of his own. Now, the role of the Command Module pilot often gets overlooked, but he was effectively the second in command of the mission and had his own packed schedule of science to carry out. Al Warden was also a member of an unusual club. He was one of only seven men who have been totally alone in space in orbit around the moon, sometimes completely cut off from the rest of humanity. Well, thanks to the nice people at Space Lectures, I went to meet Al when he was over in Yorkshire recently to talk to him about this total isolation.
It's kind of funny in a way. Everybody is focused on those who land on the moon, but their function is to pick up a rock. They're just out gathering rocks, and they bring all those rocks back. They get analyzed in the laboratories back in Houston, and then they get compared to the remote sensing data that we collected from lunar orbit, and out of that you can compile a program that allows you then to analyze the entire surface of the moon without ever setting foot on it. You can do it from orbit quite easily, actually. I photographed, as an example, in high resolution, about 25% of the lunar surface, the first time that had ever been done. I mapped about that same 25% of the moon's surface. That's a lot of data to come back. In fact, I guess they're probably still looking at it.
I'm interested in your thoughts as the lander separated from the command module, and you see it getting smaller and smaller in the window. What goes through your mind when that's happening?
Well, first off, you wish them luck. You know, I hope you land okay. The second thought is, gee, I'm glad they've gone, because now I got this place all to myself. And so I had three wonderful days in a spacecraft all by myself. And that spacecraft was not very big to begin with, but with three people in it, it's really small. And when I had it all to myself, I had lots of room to move and do whatever I wanted to do. So it was kind of stressful in a way, because they were going to go down and land, and that's a dangerous thing to do. But it was also very calming and peaceful, because now I had that all to myself.
Calming and peaceful. Wasn't it lonely?
You know, there's a thing about being alone, and there's a thing about being lonely, and they're two different things. I was alone, but I was not lonely. My background was as a fighter pilot in the Air Force, and then as a test pilot, and that was mostly in fighter airplanes. I was very used to being by myself. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Didn't have to talk to Dave and Jim anymore. Except once, every time I come around, it's just say hi. On the backside of the moon, I didn't even have to talk to Houston, and that was the best part of the flight.
A quarter of a million miles away, though.
Yeah, you're a long ways away, and I guess the thing that that most impressed me about being in lunar orbit, and particularly the times when I was by myself, was that every time I came around the backside of the moon, I got to a window where I could watch the Earth rise, and that was really phenomenal. And I did that 75 times, and it was just a spectacular sight. The backside of the moon, where I was, one section of the orbit was shadowed from both the sun and the Earth, so it was complete darkness. And what I found there was that the number of stars were just, I mean, so immense. In fact, I couldn't pick out individual stars. It was like a sheet of light. And I found that fascinating, because it changed my ideas about what we think about the universe. And I realized that we build theories about physical things and about the Earth and about the moon and about the universe out there based on what we can see and we can touch and we can measure and that kind of thing. And I realized that we kind of missed the boat on the universe out there in our thinking, because there's just billions of stars out there. The Milky Way galaxy that we're in contains billions of stars, not just a few. And there are billions of galaxies out there. So what does that tell you about the universe? Well, it tells you that we just don't think big enough.
Did that not make you feel even smaller and even more alone?
Oh yeah, yeah. You want to feel insignificant? Go behind the moon sometime. That'll make you really feel like you're nothing. Even looking back at the Earth, you feel that way because the Earth, of course, is home, and you associate that with home, and it's the only colorful planet we can see. And yet, it's about the size of the moon when you're out there looking back. It's not much bigger. So you realize that all these objects are, you have to put them on a scale some way to make any sense out of it. And further away from the Earth you get, the smaller it gets, and you feel pretty small.
I'm intrigued that you said you preferred being out of contact with Houston. Why was that?
Oh, I didn't need somebody yammering in my ear while I was out there. I had a lot of work to do. I had a lot of things that I was trying to accomplish. And it's kind of a joke. It's not really true. I kind of say that in a joking way. If anything serious were to come up, I would certainly want them to be able to contact me. But if everything was going well, I didn't need to talk to them. And I could concentrate on the science that I was doing. So I was very comfortable back there without having to talk to Houston.
Are there lessons that astronauts in the future can learn if and when we return to the moon or go on to Mars and start having these long-duration missions, whether, you know, alone or as a couple, as one suggestion in the last few weeks, or even a small group? Are there lessons to be learned from your experiences?
Oh, I think there probably are, although we all had different experiences. The lesson I got was don't get too friendly with your crew. Long periods of time that you spend with the other two, and I found that I was more tuned to doing the job I had to do than I was in interfacing with them. We all had things to do, but I focused on the operations that I had to do. And I think there's a lesson there. We were very good professionally. We really worked well together professionally. But we're not particularly great friends.
We're used to these images of the footprints, yeah, on the moon, and the first footprint, the last footprint, these footprints, which will be there pretty much forever, mm-hmm, as long as the moon is there. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your book, all the way between the Earth and the moon, you're dumping urine into space. Right. I guess, essentially, your urine is probably in orbit around the moon. So is that your legacy?
It could be. We actually made some urine dumps when we were in lunar orbit. What we'd have to do is we'd open the valve and flush it all out and then make a trajectory change so we got out of the orbit of where it, yeah, it could still be there. However, the moon doesn't have enough gravity to retain particles in orbit, and that's why there's no atmosphere. There's a thing called escape velocity, and then there's a thing that goes that, well, any particle that's in orbit has a mean free molecular velocity. That means that it's moving around. Here in our atmosphere, there are molecules banging together all the time, but they never get fast enough to escape the Earth's gravity. On the moon, that mean free molecular velocity was greater than the escape velocity of the moon. So all the light elements are gone. There's no atmosphere. So I suspect anything that we dumped has probably kind of disappeared by now.
Oh, so you have nothing there.
I don't think there's any. My guess is there's nothing left. I don't know, but that'd be my guess. Yeah.
See, I bet no one's ever asked him about his urine before. That's Apollo 15 Command Module pilot Al Warden, my new favourite Apollo astronaut. I should clarify, so I tweeted about this as my new favourite astronaut. Obviously, Tim Peake is my favourite astronaut. Al Warden is my second favourite astronaut, my favourite Apollo astronaut. I must also thank Space Lectures again for making that interview possible. And we'll put up a link to Space Lectures on our Facebook page. And one more bit of Al Warden's wisdom right at the end of the podcast.
He's amazing,
isn't he?
He's
great, isn't he? I thought he put the work of the Apollo astronauts on the moon in context.
Yes, their function is just to pick up a rock. I love that. Wasn't that nice, though, Lucy, when he mentioned about looking at the stars and seeing it as a sheet of light.
That was very moving. And it's really nice to have that perspective of looking out into our own galaxy, because there's so much focus about looking back at the Earth and feeling that separation and the fragility of the Earth. But looking at the stars and realising that we're just a tiny part of an immense universe was really nice.
I'd never heard him be interviewed before, and perhaps that's why maybe NASA kept him on a tight leash, because
his book is actually really good. His book is excellent. It's thoroughly recommended.
Well, thank you to our studio guest, Lucy Green from Mallard Space Science Laboratory. The Space Boffins podcast is supported by the Atrium Space Insurance Consortium and with a grant from the UK Space Agency.